and welcome to the Offside Rule Women's World Cup edition in association with Spotify. My name's Kate Borsay, and for the duration of the 2019 Women's World Cup, myself and a host of former Lionesses and women's football experts will be guiding you through the action in France, right the way through to the final on the 7th of July. This is part two of our previews, groups D to F. And you're in for a treat. In the studio with me today, we say bonjour to women's football writer, purveyor of many a World Cup in his time, formerly of The Independent and currently women's football correspondent for World Soccer magazine, it's Glenn Moore.
Hello.
Hi, Glenn. Alongside you, we welcome back former Lionettes and current West Ham captain. It's everyone's favourite here on the Offside Rule, Gilly Flaherty.
Hello.
How are you both doing before liftoff? Are we building with our excitement levels here in the studio as well, Glenn?
Yeah, very much so. Been a lot of coverage, TV and in the papers, and just finalising my packing before going out there.
So you're going out on...
I'm actually going out on Friday morning and straight to Paris for the opening game.
Wow. Okay, Gilly, how about excitement levels in your life at the moment as you watch some of your teammates, some of your former teammates get ready to perform on the world stage?
Yeah, I think obviously there's excitement everywhere. I mean, if you're just looking on their Instagram profiles, and obviously I've got quite a few of teammates and ex-teammates on there who are going, and it's so good to see the excitement, and I can't wait for it to start.
Me neither. Remember, you'll only be able to hear us on Spotify for this tournament, so make sure you're subscribed to keep up with our daily episodes from here on in. No premium account necessary, by the way. Please let us know here at The Offside Rule if you want any questions answered by tweeting us at Offside Rule Pod. You can also find us there on Instagram as well. And over on our website, offsiderulepodcast.com, we've got a full breakdown, previews of all the teams out there in France, plus some great interviews there as well, and build up coverage. Donc laisse-moi te chanter. And what a lovely song that is. It's the current number one in France, and I cannot get it out of my head. Neither can I the Lionesses, because we're building up here to England and also Scotland in Group D. So England, land of hope and glory, and land where it's illegal to handle a fish in suspicious circumstances. Never knew that. Thank you, producer Abby, for that fact. Hoping to slip away from that defence and neighbours Scotland, who are making their debut in this tournament and who suffered quite preposterously the banning of football in 1424. So they can blame that if it all goes to pot. Alongside them, Japan, 2011 champions and host to a festival known as Kanemaru Matsuri, which means something like the festival for the phallus of steel. OK. And finally, in Group D, we've Argentina, whose national sport is pato, originally played by cowboys on horseback in the early 1600s with live ducks in baskets. None of that very helpful, but interesting nonetheless. Let's get into England, their most anticipated tournament ever. More build-up, more coverage, and with that, more expectation as the team try and better the bronze medal they won out in Canada 4 years ago. But where are we at, sensibly? If we forget the hype, Glenn, where are we at with this England team?
Well, the problem is we really don't know. You could make a case for up to 10 teams to win the tournament, and England is definitely one of those. The bar has been set very high by Mark Sampson with successive semi-finals. I mean, Phil Neville came in. It was a surprise appointment, to put it mildly. I think what he's done mostly has been very impressive. Certainly the players like him. He's very thorough. You could not fault his work ethic. But qualification really for England is a given. So therefore, and then they've got friendlies, which are quite hard to tell. I mean, I think, for example, we played better against New Zealand than we did against Denmark, but we lost against New Zealand and we beat Denmark. So this is now the acid test. You know, what's he going to do in the finals? And there is so much that can go right or go wrong just in a sort of 90-minute match. But we really don't know. I mean, England could win it, or they could be out of the last 16.
Oh, goodness me. So it's wide open for Glenn. Gilly, what about you? What are your thoughts on this team? I know you've played with several of these Lionesses. How do you think they're feeling? And as a player, what's your take on how Phil Neville's prepared for this tournament?
They're going to go in for it full of confidence. There's obviously been a lot of hype. They've done a lot of stuff on media and social media and getting it out there. And they've done massive to raise the game for everyone over here. So I think they should win the group, but saying that and actually happening is obviously a different story.
We've heard Phil Neville talk about how the girls are so up for it. They want to do more training. They want to learn more tactics. They are forever badgering him, if he's to be believed, to try and get better. They really want it, and he's instilled that in them. But is there a case with some of the younger players there that, like small children, they've got overexcited, they're hugely buzzing after being called up, and they're experiencing a little bit of flatlining now, a little bit of exhaustion, pre-tournament exhaustion before it all kicks off, Glenn.
I think the feeling now for some time has been they can't wait for the matches to start. You do get this period, you know, the squad's being named and that's like a big high. And then after that, you're just waiting for the games to start, wanting to avoid injury, looking to impress the manager in training. I found the squad I thought was very easy to predict, but picking the 11 is much, much harder, and the players will feel that as well.
Let's talk defence, because that is one area that has concerned me, because it's so important, isn't it, Gilly, to establish that defence from early on. We know that Mark Sampson in Canada did that. He had that centre-back pairing. We were discussing this yesterday of Laura Bassett and Steph Horton there. And of course, Claire Rufferty and Lucy Bronze established themselves pretty early on in that tournament, and they remained consistent throughout. We're yet to have that consistency. In fact, if you look at perhaps the first choice centre-back in my mind pairing of Horton and Millie Bright, they've only played together in just three of his 19 pre-tournament games so far. Where's that for you? How important are that defence? And are you equally concerned that we don't seem to know quite what's going on with it yet?
Yeah, I think the defensive partnership, you talk about centre-backs, but I mean, me and Raph have had this discussion many a time this season that the relationship between the centre-back and the full-back is just as important between centre-back and centre-back. And I mean, I watched obviously the New Zealand game, and I heard beforehand, obviously the assistant manager said about Abby McManus was playing instead of Millie Bright, and they've chosen that for a reason because of the game they're playing. But personally for me as a centre-back, it takes time to build up a relationship with the person next to you. You have to trust that player. You have to know how each other plays. So for me, it's ideally you'd like to go in there with a solid back four and knowing the back four, and then obviously then if there is injuries, then people know what they've got to do. But I think something like your defence, I don't think you should change unless it's down to an injury.
Who's your first choice back for that England team?
I think you'd go Lucy Bronze right back, Steph Hart and Millie Bright, and probably Demi Stokes left back.
Dare we say it, Glenn, but the England team has the potential to be actually one of the tournament's most entertaining with their firepower.
Yes, they could. They've got lots of attacking power. I mean, that's probably the strength of the squad. I mean, there's a slight issue with the fact that we're playing on the wing, two players who now play centre-forward and don't play on the wing very often. But, I mean, the emergence of Beth Mead has been a huge bonus. Ellen White looks much more comfortable playing in the centre than she did playing wide and has been scoring goals. The issue is getting the formation right to get the best out of all those players. But there is a lot of potential there.
Fran Kirby, let's talk about Fran quickly, because she was who we were, I guess, hyping up the most for the last tournament in Canada in 2015. Someone that you've played with at Chelsea, Gilly, and you know very well. Should we be concerned that we are perhaps not hearing as much about this wonderful player, this very gifted player, as we should be? Because she's had a bit of a stop-start season.
Fran's one of my really good friends within football, and she's probably got one of the biggest hearts in football. And I think she had obviously a fantastic World Cup in 2015. But I think for her, obviously, she's not played as much this year as she would have liked. And obviously, she might be lacking that confidence side of it, because playing games is what gives you confidence. But I have no doubt on the biggest stage that you can count on Fran Kirby. And I just really hope that she goes out there and gets some goals for us.
She can produce something special, that's for sure. All right, we're talking about something special. Let's go over to Lindsay Hooper, who's been in and about the England camp. So, Lindsay, tell us how you're settling in.
Well, I can't complain, Kate. I'm on a rooftop bar, the sun's shining.
Trust
it's nice.
Hoops.
I get to look out at the sea, little bit of music in the background.
It's already reminding me of our time in Brazil. Apart from all your lovely surroundings, tell us about the football side of it. Any information on England as to how they're settling in? What's the general vibe like out there?
Yeah, well, they got a really lovely welcome at the hotel. So their team hotel, like, they had lots of children there and a big welcome as they got off their team bus. So I think they were made to feel very special here in France. And even at the airport, which I was there when they got off their plane, lots of the staff were rushing over, wanting autographs, all that sort of thing. So there does seem to be quite a frenzy around the World Cup. But in particular, a lot of people interested in meeting the England team. And, you know, you see people go up to them for autographs all the time. And of course, the interest isn't just in the players. You know, Phil Neville has people approaching him as well as the head coach.
Who's been getting the biggest cheer? Who's been getting the best welcome out of the Lionesses?
Oh, easily it has to be Lucy Bronze, because she's a Champions League winner. She plays for Lyon in France. So a lot of people know who she is. And I have heard quite a lot of mutterings. I've seen a couple of shirts as well with her name on. And, you know, there's not that much in terms of signage around France, though. That's the only disappointment. I've seen my first poster on the back of a bus going down the promenade in Nice today. And when you go up to the training facility and when you go to the stadium, it does start to become more apparent that there is a Women's World Cup going on, but I'd love it to be further afield and around all the streets and little towns.
Mm. You've obviously been out with me for the last Women's World Cup, but also out in Brazil for World Cups as well, Olympic Games too. How does the amount of fan zones and the sort of general pickup on the streets seem to be so far? Have you got, you know, established areas where people can go and watch football who don't necessarily have a ticket?
I think people are working on that. And I know that there's a group within England, in particular with friends and family, who are trying to set up areas for England fans to go if they want to go and watch. And there's people that have hired camper vans and all sorts to come out here in terms of Lionesses fans. The main thing that strikes me straight away is the amount of media that are here. I mean, I think there's 10 different people accredited from the Telegraph alone. When you look at written media, well, that wasn't nowhere near the case for us, was it, when we were in Canada?
No.
So you've got so many people here, lots of different TV crews, you know, everybody wanting to cover it. Seeing colleagues from TalkSport, from the BBC, but just far afield, you know, you've even got, you know, smaller websites that are wanting to come and get content. So it feels like everyone's getting immersed in this, and hopefully on Friday for the welcome ceremony and then followed by the opening match for France, we'll really see that everyone's got whipped up and that this is going to be a tournament really to set the standard to a new level.
Well, that's Lindsay out in Nice, as is Lioness goalkeeper Mary Earps. Speaking to our friends at Sportspiel, Mary's been discussing what the main strength of the Lionesses squad is.
I think we've got so many different types of player. I feel like we've got a little bit of everything. You know, we've got the strong, rugged, like dirty, get job type of player. We've got the tight and technical players, you know, who want to like pass it around and pop it. We've got the fast players who can run in behind. We've got the tricky players who can make something happen and do a little bit of magic. We've got strength and depth and versatility. So I feel like in tournament football, you know, you don't know who you're going to get. Some of the time, you know, it's dependent on results, and you need to be able to, people get injured, you know, they have bad games, people have good games, like the squad is going to change and the team's going to change. So, you know, you're playing a certain type of opposition and you want to, the formation changes. So yeah, it's super important to be able to adapt to that.
Well, that's with thanks to Alistair Hooper and our friends at Sportspiel, and you can find the whole interview out on Spotify. We shouldn't talk about England forever. We need to focus on Scotland. Of course, the opener for that group, England versus Scotland, on Sunday. Shelley Kerr, she's the manager of that team, and she's been responsible, really, I guess, for a bit of a turnaround in their performances. Gilly, someone you know very well, Shelley.
Yeah, obviously, Shelley was my coach at Arsenal, and obviously she came in just after Laura Harvey. So obviously she wanted to implement a style of play. For one thing that I can say for Shelley is that she's a tough coach. She's like a tough love coach, but she's very organised. And I think that's what you can see from Scotland's performances since she's taken over, is that she's got them defending solidly and got them organised. And a great defence can make you win anything in any tournament. So when she signed and she took over, I remember speaking to Jane Ross about it, and obviously Erin Cuthbert as well. And it was the unknown of what she was going to bring, but obviously she's Scottish, she's got that passion, she's got that fire, and she's brought that into that team.
And she's done really well nurturing the young talent within that squad as well, and that's so important if we're to talk about where Scotland go after this World Cup, regardless of what happens to them. But what is going to happen to them, Glenn? How do you rate Scotland's chances in that group?
I think they've got a very good chance of getting out of the group. The way the competition is structured, four groups will produce three teams going through, and with Argentina being in Group D, England, Scotland, Japan would all expect to go through. So it's very helpful for them. They've got a good side. England certainly won't take them lightly and shouldn't do, and you expect them to do quite well.
Who are we watching out for? Kim Little, I know you've mentioned, but also Erin Cuthbert in the last year or so has really come out and shown what an exceptional talent she is, Glenn.
Yeah, I was just thinking, I mean, Julia, did you expect Erin to come on so much this year, having played with her last year?
Yeah, I did. I think it was just a matter of time. Obviously, I'd played with her previously, and I remember playing against her when she was at Glasgow, and she was just like a little Jack Russell in midfield, and we obviously all highlighted her then, and then obviously then she signed for us, and she's just grown since minute one. I remember obviously we went to Portugal for pre-season in Chelsea, and she just went straight on. Like, it was incredible the rise that she's had, and she's had a fantastic year on the pitch this year, and I just really hope that she stays fit and healthy for this tournament.
So she will be unfazed by this tournament, because there are, of course, going to be players in that Scotland squad, especially those who didn't make it through to the Euros or who perhaps experienced not such a great Euros, who might be a little bit intimidated by this atmosphere? Or is there no danger of that? Are they ready and prepped for the world stage?
If you're talking about Erin personally, I don't think anything phases her. She's she's one of the greatest youngsters coming through, but she's one of the nicest girls as well. And I think any pressure put on her just makes her up her game as well. But obviously then you've got the likes of the experience around her. An example, Kim Little. Obviously then I'm going to talk about Jane Ross because I'm biased and she's one of my teammates. But I think the good thing about Scotland is they've got that mix. And like obviously Glenn said, is that they missed out on some big players in Euro 2017. And I think it's great that they've been given that platform now as well.
Well, we've heard about Erin Cuthbert and Kim Little and a few others, but who else is out there in France for Scotland who we need to be paying attention to? Well, here's football journalist Emma Dodds.
Oh, there's so many great names for people to look out for when it comes to the Scotland team. We've got quite a number of players, actually, that play down south. Claire Emslie, who's just won the FA Cup with Manchester City, and Caroline Weir as well. And Emslie, one to look out for, certainly, because she's just signed with Orlando Pride. And if you follow the football over there in the United States, you'll know that that really is the glitterati of women's football. She's going to play with the likes of Ali Krieger and Alex Morgan after the World Cup. Sophie Howard as well. She qualifies for Scotland through her grandfather, but she was actually born in Germany and scored the winner for us against Jamaica at Hampden. Elsewhere, we've got Lana Cleland. She's a striker. She's only got 24 caps, but she has been top scorer in Serie A. And she played in front of that record crowd in that match between Fiorentina and Juventus. So while she's a little bit inexperienced in the international sense, she comes over here with a lot of experience and big game experience as well, which I think is crucial in an event like this. And we've also got Hayley Lauder as well, who's set to make her 100th cap here at the World Cup. She's currently on 98. So if she gets picked for at least two of the three games that we've got in the group, then she'll make her 100th cap. And then we've got our captain as well, Rachel Corsi, the defender who's played in the States, played in Australia, and also obviously played in Scotland. But there's so many top players and so many great personalities. I'm really looking forward to the tournament starting.
And the country's buzzing about it as well. We've seen billboards, haven't we, Glenn? Tell us about these. Apparently just massive, huge amounts of graffiti appearing all over Scotland.
Yes, but it's got giant murals on walls. Yes, I mean, I do think since they've qualified, I'd love to see Steve Clarke, the new men's team manager, saying about how they want to emulate the women's team and get to a World Cup. Because don't forget, this is the first Scottish team that's got to a World Cup since Craig Brown's team in France in 1998.
With all this talk about England and Scotland, we've kind of forgotten about Japan. And they are one of the forces of world football. Let's not forget that. Winners in 2011 and finalists in Canada. They still rank seventh in the world, despite boasting a young and inexperienced squad. The players head to France with an average of just 38 caps between them. So quite raw in that team, a team in transition. Japan solid but unspectacular, Glenn. Is that going to cause them issues? There's no razzmatazz about this team.
Well, I must admit, I think they've also been sort of under the radar because we all focus in England, Scotland. I mean, the team that played England and lost in the She Believes Cup was a very inexperienced team, a transitional team. When you look at them, I mean, they have got, I think they've got 14 players under 25, which is very young. The oldest player is only 31. But they've got five players who were there in the final last year. They've got some people who are still date from 2011 when they won the competition. So, I mean, they do have players like Asaki Kumagai at Lyon, very good players. So they've got quite a lot of experience. They keep the ball well. They've got a lot of energy. You really wouldn't want to be playing them in Nice in 30 degree plus in England's final game, needing to get a result.
Yes, so you're basically saying England need to do the job before they meet Japan.
And also, winning the group is very important. If you win the group, then you get a relatively straightforward second-round tie. If you come second in the group, you get quite probably Canada or the Netherlands. And both of those are good sides.
Okay, well, you've mentioned Leon Saki Kumagai and Mizuo Sakaguchi, both of whom were part of that emotional and historic win in 2011 for Japan. Gilly, when we look at this team, solid but unspectacular, that's not necessarily a bad thing when you're talking about just getting out of this tough group.
No, definitely. And I think, obviously, I'm talking about from previous experience playing in Japan at lower age levels, the youth age. they've always been a tough opposition. And obviously, like Glenn said, the combination football that they play, like if you haven't got the ball, it is hard to defend against them. It is tiring. But obviously, again, you're talking about Canada in 2015, obviously the England-Japan game there, where it was obviously unfortunate that we went out to an own goal. But again, I don't think you can write off Japan at all in this tournament.
Well, not since 1995 have England been to a Women's World Cup and not met Japan. So there's a lot of history there to draw on. Let's move on to Argentina, the final team in this group, who make a first appearance at a World Cup since 2011. They've never won a point at the World Cup, Glenn. Is that going to change?
I don't think so.
Glenn has killed off Argentina, everyone, already.
I don't think so. I mean, I don't think, again, though, they're going to be beating 11-0 like they were in China in a couple of World Cups ago. They do have a Lyon player, Saleh Hamy, who's obviously a good player. There's no one at Lyon who's not a bad player. But they went two or three years without playing a game. They were largely neglected by their federation. They've only just come back. So qualifying is an achievement in the circumstances that they've had. I mean, you look at the backing the FA has given the England Lionesses, and you look at countries like Argentina, where simply they were threatening to go on strike because they weren't getting their $10 a day expenses payments, never mind all the other stuff.
Yeah, only 9 of Argentina's players are professional. So I think you've got to realistically look at sort of how they're going to stand firm against teams like England, of course, and Scotland, who, you know, I'm totally expecting Scotland to turn up with a lot of grit and determination, and that will far make up for anything that they might lack technically, perhaps. You mentioned Saleh Hamy, very capable of entertaining, along with Estefania Bonini as well, a couple of players to look out for. That's if they actually get the ball, but the problem is they might not get the ball very often.
No, but I think as we saw the weekend, if they're organised at the back, and I suspect if I was the Argentina manager, I'd be spending a lot of time working on the back four, working on back eight or back nine, really, and defending. If you don't get an early goal, it can be very difficult to break teams down.
All right, well, there should be goals galore in Group D with all that lot, but who's going to make it into the group stages? Gilly?
I'm going to go for England to win the group, but a part of me thinks Scotland's going to come second with Japan in third.
Glenn?
England or Japan to win the group, Scotland to qualify in third place.
OK, all right, thank you. Let's move on then to Group E.
From the team who bring you the award-winning Totally Football Show comes the imaginatively titled Totally Nations League Show. Join us this June for this special series as we see who, out of England, the Netherlands, Switzerland and host Portugal, will pick up international football's newest trophy. The Totally Nations League Show, totally from Portugal, on Spotify and nowhere else. Subscribe and listen for free now.
OK, Group E. In this group, you'll only find teams beginning with C or N, so that's quite nice and easy to remember. Canada, they were the hosts last time out until they were dispensed of by England on Canada Day, no less. I like to reel that fact out. And consumers of more macaroni and cheese than any other nation in the world, the Netherlands European champions. They've been making cheese since 400 AD, and I hope that cheese doesn't exist still because it's going to be pretty stinky. Next up, New Zealand recently defeated England at the But here's an empowering stat for you. New Zealand's the only country in the world where all the highest positions have been simultaneously held by women. In 2006, the Queen, the Governor-General, the PM and the Speaker of the House of Representatives and the Chief Justice were all women. All hail New Zealand for that. And finally, Cameroon, the only country in the world named after a crustacean. In 1472, Portuguese explorer Fernando Po named the country Rio dos Camarões, which means the River of Prawns, after he saw the immense number of shrimp in the country's Wuri River. That's our second shrimp-related fact of the series, by the way. Well done, us. Canada, ranked 5th in the world. Let's move on to them. Biggest achievement at the tournament so far was placing 4th in the 2003 World Cup in the US. They always present a strong team, Gilly. They're always in and around it, but sort of fail to make any great impact when it comes to the later stages of the tournament. What's your take on them?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you've got Christine Sinclair as well, who's obviously, she's coming close to her 300 games and 200 goals for her country. For them, she's going to be a massive player. But I think, again, I think it's with Canada. I think it's taking their chances, which I don't think they've done previously. But obviously, I play with Adriana Leon as well at West Ham, who's a very creative player, very direct. And I find Canada a very physical team when they play. So I think that will be one of their main strengths as well going into this tournament.
So you need really the technicality there to back that back that physicality up, and we saw that out in Canada. But you get the feeling, Glenn, that, you know, last time out 4 years ago in Canada was their best chance of doing anything significant at a World Cup, and that sort of remains so.
Probably, but they had a change of manager, which hasn't helped. John Herdman was an inspirational coach, whereas I think Kenneth Heinemoller, though, he has come through the setup, so he knows the team, maybe less inspirational as a person. Christine Stinker was still very, very important. My concern really is that there may be, the focus may be so much on Sinclair breaking Abby Wambach's record, which she's got very close to now, the 184 goals record, that might take the edge off actually the main business of the tournament, which is getting out of the group and progressing in the competition. But they've got a lot of good young players, Khadija Buchanan at Lyon, Jesse Fleming, players like that. They've got some experience in people like Sophie Schmidt. They are very hard to score against. They've got a tremendous record at the back. The question is whether they can score enough at the other end.
Do they have enough fresh young talent? Because a lot of the names you mentioned we saw out in Canada, and they are powerful, good players. But where's the excitement there in that team?
They did, but they're young. I mean, some of these young players, I mean, Fleming and Buchanan, Ashley Lance, you look at Nicole Prince. I mean, they're quite young players. They did bring through a whole wave of young players ahead of the tournament at home. I mean, these players will be around for a long time.
So they're still dining out on that. OK, moving on to the Netherlands. It's just their second appearance at a FIFA Women's World Cup. But this time they've got the best FIFA Women's coach of 2017, Serena Weigman, as their manager. Unexpectedly, they were European champions, Glenn. Are they going to capitalise on that and do something significant here?
Well, they've been struggling a bit for form. They had to go for the playoffs to actually get to the World Cup. I mean, I covered that tournament, and they were brilliant in that tournament. I mean, they swept England away in the semi-finals, and they were carried on by a wave of enthusiasm at home. And they're still getting that enthusiasm at home. They had 30,000 people. What was their last game, their send-off? I expect also, given the geography, they will get a lot of support in France. A lot of people go, the Dutch travelling numbers to watch sport. They've just started to hit a bit of form. They put 7 past Chile, 3 past Australia. They've got a very, very good midfield, an excellent attack with, obviously, Miedema is a brilliant finisher. They're going to be a threat. I mean, they have to get out of the group, obviously, because it's quite a tricky group, but they are going to be a threat if they get that momentum going. They're a difficult team to play against.
So the criticism, Gilly, of the Netherlands is that they haven't really moved on from that championship win 2 years ago, and that they need to perhaps come up with other options and other formations if they're to do anything in this tournament. But they do have perhaps the most lethal front four in the world. Glenn, you've mentioned some of the names already. Vivian Miedema, WSL leading scorer this season. Danielle van der Donk set up most of those goals. Shanice van der Sanden won the Champions League. And Lieke Martins, who's just awesome.
And Manchester United's new player, Jackie Grunden.
Another one to add to the mix as well. You will have come up against Miedema. Tell us about her.
She's one of the most difficult forwards to mark, and probably one of the most casual at the same time. I think in the box, you can't give her time, you can't give her space. I think you have to be prepared that she likes a Cruyff turn and she likes to do a fake shot. So that's for anyone who's listening, who's playing against her in this World Cup, as a tip. But yeah, she's a natural in front of goal. And I think if you're in the same team as her, you bank on her to score 9 times out of 10 when she's in front of goal. So I think the positive for Holland is that they're going in there with players that are on form. I think Danielle van der Donk has had one of her best years at Arsenal. Such a creative player, and she's just a nuisance as well to be playing against and to mark. She's in there, she's out, she's up against the defence, and she's back into midfield. So I think with her and Miedema up there, I think it's going to be hard for any defence to handle.
Let's move on to New Zealand. This is their coach Tom Seremani's 4th World Cup, and he'll be taking captain Ali Riley with him to carry the team through the tournament. One of the most experienced players, Ali, in the squad, currently plays for Chelsea. The analysis here really is that they're okay when they're playing 10 players behind the ball, but they'll get shredded if they're opened up at all. Their best attacker, Hannah Wilkinson, coming back early from an ACL injury, not yet 100%. We did see them against England, though, Glenn. Realistically, what are we expecting from them in this tournament?
Well, they'd love to get a win. They've played 12 games in the World Cup and never won a game yet. So I think that's their first target, to beat somebody, anybody. It's interesting. I mean, they beat England. The first 20 minutes, they looked all over the place. Once they got themselves organised, and Abby Oseg's a very, very good player, captain of the North American League champions, they were very hard to break down. But then they lost to Wales on Tuesday night. So you can't quite tell what you're going to get. I mean, I don't think they're going to score many goals. So making sure they can keep them out is important. They will be aiming to come third in the group, or certainly in the top three. This might be a difficult group to get out of in third place, though.
Gilly, Ali Riley, the captain of that side, currently plays for Chelsea. What's your experience of her?
Yeah, well, we played against her in the Champions League. Obviously, when I was at Chelsea, she was at Rosengard, and I know that Emma Hayes rated her very highly. So it wasn't a surprise to see Emma bring her to Chelsea. But I think what she possesses is she's a great defender, 1v1 defender. She's very strong. I think she showed that against England, but she's also got the attacking threat too, and she can put a great delivery into the box. And I think when we played Chelsea at home this year, she came on and I think she changed the game, her and Backman, and obviously provided the assist for Backman to score the goal. So I think she'll be a crucial player for them as long as, again, she stays fit, she stays healthy as well.
Let's move on to Cameroon then. If you aren't that familiar with them, that's because this is only their second appearance at the World Cup after their debut last time out in 2015. Glenn, they fired their manager after that though.
Well, they fired him after qualifying, having qualified and done well in the African Nations, Women's Cup of Nations, and they appointed the fitness coach, which might seem a slightly odd decision to make, but Alain de Jumfer does have quite a lot of club experience. They beat Switzerland in 2015, which we seem to forget, and they did well, and they qualified for the second round, so they can't be completely written off, and certainly in the African Nations Cup, they were very hard to score against.
Gilly, they were the surprise package in Canada 4 years ago as the only African team to make it through to the knockouts. They'll do well to match that in France, but they do demonstrate how African football's moved on, particularly in terms of women's teams.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously they're showing that there's definite growth there. And I think sometimes it's like the unknown. Obviously, Cameroon coming in there, obviously they're not maybe seen as much as other teams. So it's sort of the unknown going into it. You can prepare and you can watch clips, but maybe these players haven't played that much against, obviously, the African team. So I think it's out of them and New Zealand to fight for, obviously, the third spot. So, yeah, it'd be exciting for whoever goes out of that group.
So who's going to make it through for you?
I think Holland will win the group. I think Canada will be second. I think it'll be close. But then I'd say New Zealand to be third just because I've got a little bit of loyalty with, obviously, playing with Ria Percival at club. So I'd like to see them come third.
Glenn?
I'd say that's to win it. Canada to come second. New Zealand might come third, but not qualify. It's going to be quite tricky, that third place.
All right, well, that's Group E done. Time for one more group, and that's where the favourites are. It's Group F. All right, well, in Group F, USA come to play. And if you live in Massachusetts, it's illegal to own an explosive golf ball. Didn't even know one of those existed. We also have Sweden, runners-up at the last Olympics and home of being green. 99% of Sweden's waste is recycled. Nice work. We find debutantes Chile, where you'll find the world's largest swimming pool. It's 1,000 yards long, 20 acres in area and 115 foot deep. The giant pool holds 66 million gallons of seawater. I just want to say, what a waste. After Sweden being green, that seems very excessive. Finally, it's Thailand, a country known for rice. In fact, it's so important that in Thai, when you say you're hungry, the words literally translate to, I want to eat rice. I want to talk USA, though. Let's roll on to the defending champions, seeking a fourth title at this Women's World Cup and a ranked number one in the world. The Americans have never finished lower than third at a World Cup, Glenn.
You would have to fancy them for every competition. They have made some changes. But Jill Ellis has had to overhaul the team after the last Olympics when they went knocked out in the quarterfinals, which is a very poor result for them. And there are one or two transitional areas there. But you certainly have to say, you know, straight out of the group and they're going to be a threat.
They're a team bursting with experience, Gilly. We know this. Talent and experience, actually. The likes of Alex Morgan, Megan Rapinoe. It's also expected to be 36-year-old Carly Lloyd's last tournament. The former Man City midfielder was FIFA World Player of the Year and Golden Ball winner at the World Cup in 2015. She scored that insane hat-trick against Japan in the final in Canada 4 years ago. So when you've got Carly Lloyd, Alex Morgan, Megan Rapinoe, Lindsay Horan as well, there's a wealth of talent here. Is there any concern that they won't gel together with some of the newer players that have come in?
I don't think so. I think USA are experienced enough and the players are experienced enough to know that this is the pinnacle of a player's career. They're only going to get obviously one shot at doing it right. So I don't think that they'll bring that into it. I think they're very professional and diligent with what they do. But even when I was looking at the squad and I'm trying to obviously highlight key players, it's hard not to highlight them all. I think you're talking about a defender and myself coming up against them forwards. Any forwards that plays, it's going to be a tough job for any defenders. So I think that's what USA have, is they have that strength.
What about their defence, though? Are you concerned that perhaps they could leak a goal or two?
I watched the game against Scotland. Obviously, I know it was a while back, but they played them. And obviously, with Crystal Dunn, I played with her at Chelsea. She's a fantastic player, attacking-wise. But I'm not sure sometimes if she's trying to do too much attacking, sometimes she gets pulled out of the position and what's left behind. But again, a defence needs to be solid to progress, obviously, into the Championship. So it's like, it's a bit of both. You don't want to always be scoring loads of goals, but then leaking them at the same end. But I think with USA, it's hard to look past them.
Is there a chink in the armour for you, Glenn?
Possibly. I mean, you're looking at, I mean, they brought back Ali Krieger. That was a surprise for the squad. And there is, it's quite an old squad in terms of average age and numbers. I mean, also, if you have someone like Carly Lloyd, you basically have to play her.
Yes.
And you're going to take someone like Carly Lloyd to a World
but
Cup.
But you can't play her all the time.
No, so that's going to be sometimes a difficult situation to manage. I mean, it's a bit like England had with Wayne Rooney towards the end of his career. Yeah, some players are such big players, it's quite difficult when they get towards the end of their careers. And you've got some young players bursting to come in, you know, the likes of Roosevelt or Mallory Pugh. You know, who do you pick? So that's going to be the difficult area for Jill Ellis to manage.
OK, well, it's only right that we speak to an American on the subject. I caught up with Caitlin Murray, author of The National Team, The Inside Story of the Women Who Changed Soccer, on expectations surrounding USA, the favourites, especially when pretty much the whole team are suing the National Federation. So my first question for you, Caitlin, is why?
Well, what they're alleging is that U.S. Soccer has been discriminating against the women's team for a number of years. And there are really, I think, two sides to this lawsuit. There is the compensation side, which is a little bit complicated, but in a nutshell, they're saying that the Federation is making more money available to the men's team overall. The part that's easier to understand is the non-compensation. So that's things like the fact that the women play a lot of their games on artificial turf, which the men haven't had to do. The men have gotten charter flights when the women have not. So it's a combination of these monetary issues and these non-monetary issues.
And am I right in saying that USA Soccer, the National Federation, actually lost money because of the men's team and their performance in the last World Cup, but yet they gained money, so they're in profit solely because of the USA women's team?
Well, one of the things that the women's team alleges in the lawsuit that we'll find out more about when this goes to trial is they point out that the Federation was expecting to lose about $400,000 in 2016, the financial year. But after the women won the 2015 World Cup, that turned into a $17 million profit because the U.S. women had surged in popularity. People were showing up to their games in groves. So, yeah, that's the allegation. U.S. Soccer says that's not true. But I think since then, we've seen that the men failed to qualify for the World Cup. And the women, their games are continuing to bring in more money for the Federation. And something people talk a lot about is revenue. The women actually have been bringing in more revenue from their games than the men for the last 3 years. So it's going to be really interesting to see how that is talked about in this lawsuit and in the trial.
USA, one of the favourites for this tournament. They are the reigning champions of Women's World Cup football. What does the nation expect from them, Caitlin?
The US is the favourites. People are talking about the team as if not winning will be a failure. And I think that's pretty interesting because they did win in 2015, and it is very difficult to repeat. It's pretty rare. And I think the U.S. got a pretty difficult draw when you sort of look at the brackets and how they have the potential to play out. So the expectations are incredibly high for the U.S., and they should be. They are the number one team, but this is going to be the toughest World Cup there has ever been. I think this U.S. team, player for player, is as talented as any team that the U.S. has ever had, but the rest of the world is as good as they've ever been.
What happens if it doesn't go to plan? We know you didn't have a great Olympics. What happens if this World Cup is not what people are expecting?
Yeah, the Olympics was a disaster. The U.S. got knocked out in the quarterfinal in that tournament. Up until that point, the U.S. had never not reached the semifinal, and I think that means that there is a very thin margin for this being an utter disaster and it being a success. I think the U.S. has to reach the semifinal. If they do, that's what they've always done. That's a good enough finish. If they don't make that, if they get knocked out in the quarterfinal, I think that would be a disaster. So there's really not much margin for error.
Sweden eliminated from the round of 16 4 years ago, but have a much more experienced squad this time round. A second place finish at the 2016 Olympics was a sign of their growth, I think. Therefore, they certainly feature among some of the stronger sides in the tournament. Glenn, tell us about this Swedish team.
Well, as we saw when they played England in Rotherham, Steph Horton's 100th cap, and sort of like Ross spoiled the party by winning and playing pretty well, and they were comfortable winners on the day. The new manager, Peter Gerhardsson, has probably introduced a bit more flair to a team that's always been traditionally well organised. Standard cliche for Scandinavian teams, but has been the case in the past. They've got some attacking talent. They've got the experience of, say, Caroline Stieger still there. It'd be interesting to see if Stina Blackensteiner, who did very well at the Euros but hasn't quite kicked on since, whether she comes back and produces, you know, the talent that we know she's got.
Well, this will be her first World Cup, Stina, and she's expected to be a starting player with hopes to get most of the goals for Sweden. Hedvig Lindahl, we've got to go and talk about her, Gilly. Much has been said about strikers ahead of this summer showpiece, but Hedvig, one of the finest goalkeepers, or could be one of the finest goalkeepers in the tournament. She's 36, she's a veteran of the game, so needs to look after herself, and one of three Chelsea players in Gerhardsson's squad.
With Hedvig, I think she's one of the best keepers in the world. And I'm going to say that because I played in front of her, and she's had a difficult year this year. She's had a difficult season at Chelsea. She hasn't played as much as I know she would have liked to. And obviously, she's announced that she's left. So I'd like to see it that the World Cup is sort of a breath of fresh air for her. It's sort of a chance now for her to show just how good she is. And I know Viggy thrives on these situations.
Like that, Viggy.
Viggy, yeah. That's her nickname, which I can proudly say that I gave to her as well.
Oh, Gilly, well done.
So, yeah, she thrives off of this atmosphere and the responsibility. She's great with the youngsters. She'll be there for the experience-wise as well, but she will be massive if Sweden wants to progress in this tournament.
Well, talking of goalkeepers, Sweden meet USA, and the last time they met, Glenn, it was the demise of Hope Solo, the USA long-standing legendary goalkeeper, who basically called the Swedish team a bunch of cowards after they disposed Team USA at that Olympics.
Yes, they parked the bus in football parlance, and it worked, and they won.
Yeah, fair play. And Hope Solo is no more.
No, she's got a thriving media career, and she's one of those people with lots of ideas and commitment to the women's game, who I suspect we will hear plenty more of.
Let's talk Chile making their debut at the tournament this summer. An exciting time for them, you know, especially when you consider that the men failed to reach the World Cup in Russia last year. With Argentina through as well, it's pretty much a celebration for women's sport in South America, which has come on leaps and bounds. And hopefully the barriers that were once there over women's football are slowly improving. How do we rate their chances as debutantes? Is this, in the nicest possible way, Glenn, a great trip out for Chile and see how they do? Or is there a serious element of being a genuine contender?
Well, certainly it's a significant moment for them because, I mean, as it is the case in Africa and in South America, quite often national teams don't play outside tournaments. I mean, after the Copa Femenino in 2014, they didn't play for 3 years, not a game at all. Then they reformed the team, you know, to compete in the Copa. They qualified, they did well, they qualified for the World Cup. So that's a huge impact for women's football in Chile. And I know the men's team have been quite supportive of them as well, which has been a big bonus. And of course, the men's team have been quite successful recently as well, which has helped. So the whole thing's a bit of an upswing. Yes, it's a day out in a way, or a month out, but funnily enough, because of the shape of the competition, for Chile and Thailand in this group, there is an opportunity. Someone has to come third and could well qualify. So the most important game in this group for them is playing Thailand in the last game. And the winner of that could get through to the last 16.
Especially if USA and Sweden cancel each other out with a draw, right?
Well, I think we can assume that USA and Sweden will take first and second and probably beat these two teams. But for third place, that could be quite interesting.
Araya and Lara are two key players for Chile who both play for Sevilla. The team coached by Jose Letelier and captained by Christian Endler. A goalkeeper apparently famous for acrobatic saves.
Yeah, I mean, obviously I played with her at Chelsea, another one that I've played with there. When she came in, she was very quiet. I think she was very young. So we didn't really get to see her true potential. But again, we saw it in training. But game time and playing time, she didn't really get a lot of. But obviously then she's left and she's obviously now at PSG and she's come on leaps and bounds. So again, she'll be fantastic for them. But obviously you're going to have to hope the rest of the team obviously help her out as well.
I'm kind of jealous of Gilly, Glenn, because she seems to have played with nearly everyone in this World Cup.
I bet she's not playing for anyone from Thailand, though.
No.
Well, that's coming up next. Before that, women's football writer Kieran Tavams back to tell us more on Chile.
What I like about Chile, and I watched them this past weekend play in Germany, and they lost the match, unfortunately. But what I like about them is they stick to their philosophy. They have a really nice style of play. They like to play the ball on the ground. They like to pass it out from the back. They have, a world-class goalkeeper in Christiane Endler, who plays for Paris Saint-Germain. And I think when you have a goalkeeper of her quality and stature, it gives the rest of the team confidence. And that's why they're happy to play the ball out of the back. They don't look to play aimless long balls. They do when they have to, but they will stick to the passing style that they like, and I think that's commendable. It can be to their detriment at times, though. They can play themselves into trouble, which could obviously lead to goals against them, especially when you're playing against the likes of the United States and Sweden in their group. But they went to Australia at the end of last year and they played two matches and they lost one of them. I think it was 5-0 off the top of my head, and they won the first game 3-2. So again, a little bit like Jamaica, there's a little bit of an unpredictability to these sides that are making their debut. No one really knows what they might do because they've never been in this situation before. They obviously qualified for the tournament as runners-up in the Copa America Femenina. So I'm quite excited to see them again, a team that I've had the opportunity to see a couple of times. I saw them in Jamaica, which is a game that they narrowly lost. But they have the capability to, as I say, frustrate opposition because they can keep the ball. They do like to pass it on the ground. And they have, as I say, a couple of players that will maybe be game changers for them. Christiane Endler at one end in goal. And Maria Rojas, who's a striker, who's played in Australia for Canberra United. And she's played in Europe as well for clubs including Slavia Prague. So I like Chile. I think it might be too difficult for them to finish above the likes of USA and Sweden, but there's no reason why they couldn't finish above Thailand in that group.
Okay, Thailand, this will be their second appearance of the FIFA Women's World Cup. They won their ticket by reaching the semi-finals of the 2018 AFC Women's Asian Cup. Mostly, in fact, entirely domestic-based, Glenn, I believe.
I mean, there's two playing college football in the States, but otherwise all based in Thailand, yes.
The football, though, has improved considerably over the past 4 years, but we're expecting quite a defensive style of play.
Well, if they've got any sense, they'll play a defensive style of play, because clearly they're going to be up against full-time teams with a lot more experience.
It's a tough draw for them, isn't it?
It is a tough draw for them. Except, again, that Chile game does offer them as well an opportunity. You assume the first two games will be difficult, and then we'll see how they get on. But it just simply, again, qualifying has been a big bonus locally. They've played loads and loads of games since qualifying, around qualification, whereas before it was a team that hardly ever played a match.
Yeah, the country well and truly behind them, which is great to see as women's football unifies populations and countries around the world. Well, their striker, Oratay Srimani, is the only member of that Thailand squad who has scored a goal at a World Cup. That was last time out. We'll wait to see if we get the same again this time. Who's going through from this group for you, Gilly?
I think it'll be obviously close between United States and Sweden. I might play devil's advocate and go for the sort of underdog in it and say Sweden to win the group.
Ooh.
Throw that in there. But I think it'll be very close between them. And then obviously Chile and Thailand, they've just got to go and enjoy it, and they really, and try and nick something. But again, I fancy Chile to come third.
Glenn.
Yes, coming second, the USA might not mind that because the winners of this group are probably going to play France in the quarterfinal.
Mm.
So they might not mind as it happens. And it is the last game. Not that I'm suggesting anyone's going to cook anything up, but winning the group might not be such a great thing because you end up playing France in the quarterfinal. Having said that, USA, I think, are mildly stronger than Sweden. So if it is a straight game, they probably win it. Not much in it, though. And Chile to pip Thailand and go through.
That's rounded up things for those final three groups. A couple of final points to round this up on. Worth remembering that VAR will be out in France, Glenn.
Yes, I think that's a good thing. FIFA have decided, and for admirable reasons, that all the officials on the pitch are to be female. The one drawback with this, and we've seen in previous competitions, is simply the women's game isn't developed enough worldwide for those officials to get enough experience of really big matches. And at the last World Cup, there were some quite poor errors. So having VAR to clarify those, you know, offside goals and those sort of things, and penalties that maybe should or shouldn't be given, I think is a good thing, because you want the right result in the end.
We've also had a little look at the mascot for this World Cup as well, Etty. It says that she is a Gallus Gallus Domesticus, which is Latin for chicken, is that right? With a passion for life and football. She comes from a long line of feathered mascots and is the daughter of Footix, the official mascot of the 1998 FIFA World Cup France. So what they're basically telling us, FIFA, is that soft toys can have children. Not only that, FIFA have introduced Etty to the world of football with a rather terrifying voiceover. Listen to this.
It's time, Etty. It's your time to shine.
It's time, Etty.
It's time for what? Is she going to get murdered out in France? I would really be building a safe room if I was Etty. And taking a panic buzzer with me at all times.
I'll have to buy one because put it next to Footix. I have the whole family set at home.
So you have every mascot, Glenn?
No, but I do have Footix because they gave it to us in the pack in 1998. Nice. And I've just never got around to get rid of it.
Very good indeed. Gilly, are you a mascot collector?
No, I'm not really, to be honest. I mean, I'm not even a teddy collector, so mascot, no, none of them. No,
have you got...
Just shirts?
Yeah, just shirts and shorts, to be honest. I like
shorts
a pair of shorts,
well.
Yeah.
To sum up with, Glenn and Gilly, a player and a team you're most looking forward to seeing at this FIFA 2019 World Cup. Glenn?
The player, Sam Kerr. I mean, she's been the top goal scorer in both the Australian and American leagues for the last 3 years. I mean, I just hope she gets enough of the ball, but yeah, it'd be great to see how well she does at this top stage. Now, she's played in the last World Cup, but now she's really approaching her prime.
So crucial for Australia. More on Australia, by the way, in our first preview pod, which is already out. What about a team you're looking forward to seeing?
There's quite a lot of teams. I mean, I'd like to see France really play the way they can play because they've got so much talent. I mean, I've tipped them to win it, so obviously they're for
me too, Glenn.
Well.
I have as well.
But they are potentially, they play really attractive football and they've got such great players. So I mean,
as long as they knit together.
I'd like to see them really play. And obviously the other thing is every tournament needs a host team to do well. It makes such a difference to the atmosphere. So, I mean, you want them to go at least to like the quarterfinals, you know, semi-final stage, and then the whole place picks up.
Gilly?
Player-wise, I think it's Erin Cuthbert. Again, I'm going to be a little bit biased, but I just think she's had such a fantastic year in football, and it's a chance for her, obviously, to play on the main stage. And obviously, she scored Scotland's first goal in the Euros. So I think she's going to take to this like a duck to water, and I'm going to be excited to see how she does. And leading into that, Scotland will be my team as well that I'm excited to watch, just because obviously I've played against several of their players and played with them, and obviously I think they deserve to be playing at this level. Yeah, I hope they do well in the tournament. I really do.
Well, you're both going to be joining us throughout the tournament. We look forward to catching up with you on the likes of Scotland and, of course, digesting all the other teams involved, these surprise picks, the players that come out of nowhere. And that's the wonderful thing about this tournament as well. So thank you both very much for your contribution. And we'll be hearing from you again soon on this Offside Rule Pod Women's World Cup edition. Well, that's it for our preview podcast. Check back in tomorrow when the tournament will be underway. Make sure you're subscribed on Spotify, as that's the only place that you'll find us. It's really super simple. Download the free app and there you go. Head over to our Twitter and Instagram at Offside Rule Pod to keep up to date with everything we're doing and the latest from the tournament as well. Over on our website, offsideruledpodcast.com, you'll find team by team previews, interviews and breakdowns throughout the group stages and on. That's it from us here on the Offside Rule World Cup edition in association with Spotify. More from us again soon.
The Offside Rule Women's World Cup Edition is a Muddy Knees Media production in association with Spotify.